Thanks so much, Dave, and just acknowledge my colleagues in the room as well. Thanks very much for turning out, and I hope that we find today is very productive. It's also very important for us to hear issues that come back from you. One of the things I just want to touch on is it's really important for your sector and government, whether it's the existing government or another government, to have some alignment. And I think that's one of the things that I have seen develop in the last couple of years. When, say, the present government started a couple of years ago, this group of small developed nations focusing on innovation as the number one sort of catalyst for economic development and gaining some competitiveness internationally. We know that we're a small nation. This group of nations, between 4 to 8 million people, includes Israel, Ireland, Denmark, New Zealand, Singapore. And it was started under MB. And so there is some, I guess, alignment between the thinking on the other side of the street and your thinking, knowing that innovation is something that needs, I guess, collaboration, it needs alignment and support and people working together to get the sort of leverage that you want to have. Like I read your descriptor, we're a bunch of young companies implementing lean startup methods in our own businesses, sharing our experiences and learning and supporting each other. I think one of the things that the lean start methodology really, I think, does a good job on is engaging entrepreneurs and founders and developers with the market as early as possible, so that you know, you hear just what the needs are, so you're not developing something that nobody wants. But you're actually, through you know, that conversation, be able to develop iterations of your product so that when you finally have it ready, it's embedded in the market already. And in many regards, this is where the formation of MB started to bring a convergence of all the different government entities that were business-facing. For a long time, government departments have had their back to business instead of facing business and engaging with business to be far more responsive to the needs of business. So as a nation, if we really want to, you know, have the first world income to support the first world needs and expectations that we have, we've got to be incredibly smart what we do, because we're competing globally. And everything's so much quicker and faster. Product development cycles are so much quicker. So it's important for government to be as nimble and sharp as your sector is. And I believe that some of the things, if I could put a... because we're putting pictures, I guess, from our sides. We've got a Prime Minister and we've got a Minister of Economic Development who are both private sector businessmen and who both understand what it is to be out there in the private sector to develop business. Stephen Joyce, of course, the big startup company he started, Energy Works, out of my city, New Plymouth. So he understands all those sorts of things. And so what we've seen, I think, over the last few years, quite a series of developments and policies that will embrace and support innovation far, far more. Just some of the policies that, no doubt, I think we'll probably talk about furthermore in the questioning would be the Entrepreneur Work Visa, making it so much easier for people to come here and be part of the, you know, innovative community. Another one, of course, which just came out in the recent budget, was the cash-out policy, black hole expenditure that, R&D companies face, and trying to ensure that cash flow is put up at the front, so you don't just have to wait, you know, several years down the line until you're actually starting to generate income to get the benefit of those tax losses that you would have incurred while you're doing the developmental phase of your product. So that's a really important one, I think. Other policies around crowdfunding, peer-to-peer lending, that through the Financial Markets Conduct Bill, which clears on the Commerce Committee with me, Gareth turns up on different occasions. And so we're all familiar with that and what that enables. We are probably leading the South Pacific region, probably ahead of Australia by about a year. And I know that China's looking at what we are doing to learn from it as well. It's just, quite new. The regulation's only out beginning this year. But what that offers is cash flow in an easier way than through the financial markets and things like that. So that, I think that's a pretty important thing as well. How's my time, Dave?
Your time's up.
Great. So there you go. A few things and some background.
Cool. Well, kia ora, nama hinui, kia koutou, kia ora. It's awesome to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I want to acknowledge Dave, you know, the startup guru, as he's called by Unlimited Mag, and I know he's been a big part of the scene in Wellington for a long time, so acknowledge you, acknowledge my colleagues. So I'm here to speak to you today about the Greens ICT vision, where we see things going and what we're going to do about it. ICT is going to be a priority for the Green Party this election. It's a big part of where we see a smart, green, innovative economy. This is the future for New Zealand. There's a limit to how many cows we can put in our paddocks or oil we can hope to find in the oceans. There's no limit to the software, expertise, the services we could be exporting globally. So for us, this is a big part of our economic vision. It will be a priority. We're putting out a great deal of policy closer to the election. And I'd like to get the message to you that the Greens have consistently and comprehensively performed to champion the ICT sector in Parliament. From more than 15 years ago, having the first website of any political party through to the only party that opposed the Skynet law, we've consistently championed ICT. We've had the first open source electorate office in the country, the only party to put out a comprehensive proposal to fund and see a second internet cable. We've supported better government procurement rules. You know, just last week I launched a comprehensive paper around 3D printing and how we transition to a digital manufacturing economy, linking old-school manufacturing with ICT technology. So we've consistently stood up for the ICT sector. It's a big part of our vision and will be a big part of our election campaign. The government has done some good things in the space, like the black hole R&D tax losses, the UFB, I'll acknowledge that. But to be frank and to be a politician for a second, they have been more focused on the TYs and the offshore oil companies than the ICT sector. Vikram is amazing, worked very well with him at Internet New Zealand. I would love to see Vikram in Parliament because it would be great to have his knowledge, but sadly he's not standing for Parliament. And I guess the question is, why don't we see an Internet Party candidate here today? And Claire. I've worked very well with Claire. We founded the Cross-Party Internet Forum. We've done some good things, like getting streaming of select committees in Parliament. But when it comes to, say, the sector and some of the statements around migration we've seen from the leader, I think this should be concerning for the ICT sector. You know, I can pledge to you, we're not going to put a levy on the internet, as some people have floated. We're not going to ban Facebook, as some people have said in the media. What I want to say is we've consistently championed your sector. So, why do we support it? Well, the opportunities are unlimited. We know wages and salaries are twice as large. R&D innovation spending in this sector is four times greater than other sectors in our economy. It's a huge export and jobs opportunity. So there's five quick things I want to talk to you about what the Green Party would do. The first is under the heading of government leadership. We want to see a government that's committed, that builds a culture of supporting the ICT sector. So in my Internet Rights and Freedoms Bill, I've proposed a package of how we could see a Chief Technology Officer for New Zealand. Someone with the mana, the expertise, the ear of government to champion technology. We've got a CIO at the moment, but we need a high-profile champion, a CTO. I've also proposed a Digital Rights Commissioner as part of the Human Rights Commission to protect our online rights offline. We've publicly said that we will be repealing the GCSB and the TICS amendments. We've publicly committed to closing the Waihopai spy base. We want New Zealand to have an independent foreign policy, not playing off sides, not spying on other countries. We want to support our sector in the Southern Pacific. Ultimately, what we want to see is a culture of support, leadership from the top, and ultimately this is what New Zealand needs to build, is that culture. This is why a lot of people move to New Zealand, skilled immigrants. I mean, I've talked to people in this sector who've moved in from overseas that said they moved here because of the environment, or they moved here because the cops don't carry guns. It's making sure we've got a culture where talent wants to live is vital. When it comes to raising capital, which I know is a critical part of any startup, what we want to see is an extension of the Venture Investment Fund. We'll continue to support the likes of, you know, the Lightning Lab and the Ice House. I note recently they've announced they're going to be dealing with fewer numbers of startups. This is something I'd like to talk to you about. a critical part about our getting our economic settings right is focusing on the productive economy. So a capital gains tax, not on the family home, helps there. From better government procurement rules to infrastructure like free Wi-Fi and public transport and a second internet cable to a whole host of education initiatives we can talk about later on, we've got a good range of policies, a focus on it, a focus on leadership. We want to support the ICT sector. This is the smart green innovation. This is how we're going to build a richer New Zealand, and we will continue to champion whether Jonathan's party's in government and scrutinise them, or whether Clare's party's in Parliament and will be a big part of any future government. So thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks, Dave, for organising. Thanks for our panel. Hope we get to do a few of these during the election campaign. The first thing I want to say is that Labour and the Greens, and probably the Internet Party, you're going to hear a lot of commonality in what you hear today. Please feel free to question us as closely as you possibly can on the specifics of policies that may or may not have been released yet. I just want to say to you that, you know, pretty much everyone in this room, I think, is startups or attached to startups in some way. And I don't know whether you know or whether you've thought about the fact that you're part of something much bigger in our country, which is really a part of our economy. And you're a critical part of that. And so, therefore, and Labour... unfortunately, we haven't released formally our policies yet. I'm going to go as close to the wind as I can on it, and I'll answer any of your questions honestly. But we are putting ICT, the ICT sector, at the heart of our economic policy development. That's pretty significant for you to hear because you're part of the engine room of that. We have to think about what kind of country we want to be. We want to be a tech-savvy nation with a plan. We want to have a maker culture. We want to have a startup culture. And we also have to make ICT. In order to do this, we've got to make ICT careers really attractive to our kids, enable them to be taught ICT in schools and to access the training that they need outside of school. This is the fastest growing part of our economy. Exports in ICT have doubled in the last 6 years, and at the moment $7 billion, so we're the third largest exporter. We've got some real issues. We've got long-term skill shortages. Bit of a cheap shot on immigration issues, but I'm happy to talk to you more about that. We need more skills coming into this country. There's no doubt about that. We're going to have to make that easier. We also need to build more skills inside our country. We've got to do that through the education system and the tertiary education system and integrate properly with business around that. We've got issues with our infrastructure. We've got a UFB rolling out, but it's not everywhere in the country. There are issues in our regions for people wanting to set up businesses where the infrastructure isn't yet right. So this isn't just an economic development strategy, this is also a regional development strategy, and I'm happy to talk more about that. Government has, at the moment, startups are actually decreasing in New Zealand. I don't know whether you know that, but they are. In the last 6 years, they've actually gone from, I think, 850 a year down to in the early 700s per year. We need to boost that up again. We need to understand what it is that is needed to get from that early idea to the next level and then to the next level above that. What are the interventions that government can make? Government has a range of levers. We're going to try and utilise as many of them, if not all of them. Strategy, Gareth's talked about that, absolutely critical. It's got to come from the top, absolute leadership from the top. Tax... R&D, accelerated depreciation, skills, I've talked about that, building our skills internally, bringing more skills in from outside, procurement. Labour has a very wide-ranging procurement policy right across a whole lot of sectors. ICT is a critical one because if you're a small company trying to build leverage, you need to make to be able to even be able to pitch for work at government level to be able to build scale. That's absolutely critical. We understand that. I know I've only got a few seconds left. But I just want to say our policy is really joined up. It goes right across from the rights, seeing New Zealand as a great place to invest because we've got a great set of legislation that is about protecting data from an economic sense and citizens' privacy, right across into education so that we're building skill levels at the school level and through to bringing those skills in and supporting the startups at the times when you really need intervention. At the same time, we don't want to get in. We don't want to interfere with your ideas. We've got to stay the stay away when you know, and try not to intervene in your actual ideas. But we've got to know when to intervene. Labor is. We've been working on this for 6 years. I've been in this portfolio for 6 years. I think we know where we stand on this. That it's an absolute critical part of our policy in this election campaign.
Sorry, just move up. I'm going to talk about why I think the party vote for internet money makes sense. And I've been thinking about this for a while, and I wanted to boil it down to a simple essence, just a simple question, right? You guys know a lot about startups. Have you ever thought about whether you would buy from a startup? And so the internet mana and the internet party is essentially a startup, right? Disruption, innovation, all of that. And if you want to buy from a startup, you know what it's like. You're not going to get a perfect, feature-based, completely ready product. And what you basically buy is a hope, a vision, a promise. So to me, I'll spend the rest of the 4 minutes talking about other stuff, but I'll tell you what, it's a simple thing. If you want to buy from a startup, that's where I think party vote, internet mana makes sense. And if you don't want to, and I completely understand because I've done that myself, there are times when I bought from a startup, there are times when I haven't. Then don't. It's as simple as that. And so the second thing is, what's the difference between internet party and other parties? And to me, the answer, again, boiling it down, is what's the difference between someone like Xero and QuickBooks or MYOB? And the fact is that if you're born digital, if you're born internet, if you're born from the cloud, right, there is nothing that can replace that. You can have a digital add-on to your party, you can have anything that you want, but when you have a small party, what you want to know is, what are their genes? What are their bones? Where do they actually come from? And so I can talk to you about all our policies. But the fact is that every policy of ours is an ICT policy. So I can talk to you about our environment policy. It's an ICT policy. I can talk to you about our health, our education. They're all, for us, they're all ICT policies. For us, the internet underlies absolutely everything and anything that we do. So I'm going to address startups in particular because I don't want to talk about the startup as a whole. Startups in particular. To me, there's some table stakes. This is the stuff that New Zealand has to get right. And if you don't get it right, everything else we're talking about doesn't make sense. The first is the second cable. If you don't have a second cable, just forget about everything else. If we've got government who can put backdoors into our software and services, forget it. There's no trust. We can do what we want. You know, the one thing that really worries me is someday someone overseas is going to wake up and understand that Xero can be backdoored by the New Zealand government without being known. That's the end of our startup culture. There are other aspects where we just have to get the table stakes right. But if we look at startups overall, to me, I look at three things. How do we get more startups? How do we grow them? And how do we sustain them? So in terms of creating startups, there's a lot of issues, but to me, the top two or three things. First of all, I actually really am happy that the party is coming up with a free tertiary education policy. Because the crushing debt that people have when they leave universities stops them from risk-taking. And we have to be able to take risks to be able to have startups. We've spoken about skills. I think we need to get our R&D funding up, and I'm really glad that other parties have the opportunity also. But doubling the amount of R&D funding is just, for me, an obvious thing. How do we grow it? To me, again, looking at startups, why don't we scale stuff that we already know is successful? That's what we do as startups, right? So Kiwi Landing Pad, absolutely successful in interconnecting New Zealand and giving startups the help that they need to succeed overseas. Why don't we scale that hugely and quickly? We have to be able to scale the amount of venture capital funding coming into New Zealand. Because right now there is money, but the terms on which we're getting it is quite severe. Because we don't have the depth, we don't have the competition there. And I think we want to see a lot more hubs, a lot more people working together. Wellington itself is like a hub. We have to see this in other places. And so the local government has to get involved. It's not only a central government or a sort of Wellington-centric town. And then in terms of sustaining it, you know, I'm absolutely of the notion that this recycling of funds that happen when funders cash out of startups is what is driving our second round of startups right now. There's a lot of people who've cashed up, they're bringing back their money, their ideas, their expertise. Now, we need a little bit of research to start nailing that down. But I think it's absolutely fine when startups sell out, and we are absolutely fine as a country being able to specialize in startups and understanding that the global world is huge and that many startups will leave New Zealand and go outside. And finally, I think we have to think about systemic issues, like I think the games industry is huge in New Zealand. Let's solve problems that are a systemic issue. And finally, let's get some green data centers. Let's get the likes of Google and Facebook. Let's bring them into New Zealand. Let's get data going out of the country rather than just coming in. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was four very different and four interesting presentations. So I'd like you guys to think about any questions that you might like to ask. And I think I will start with, and I'll give each of you a minute and a half to respond to these questions. How do you balance privacy versus security? And what policy elements do you have in your party policy that sensibly balances privacy and security? Claire?
Okay, so out of the discussion last year or the and the real controversy around the GCSB and the TICS bills came a really important discussion around privacy and citizens' privacy, not just citizens' privacy, but the privacy of our companies and anyone business wanting to operate here or start up here, and out of that came a real discussion around the fact that you need security in place, you need legislation with security, but you also need really strong legislation that protects privacy as well. The outgoing Privacy Commissioner Marie Schroff described them as twin pillars, and that they need to be both strong. And at the moment they're imbalanced, and security's gone up here, and privacy is down here. We need to reform the Privacy Act, but we need to do a lot more. In April this year, Labor announced the concept of a Digital Bill of Rights, which is a really important thing to consider. It fits in with a whole lot of stuff that's going on, starting to go on around the world, in the US, in Brazil, and some of the Nordic countries. The Internet Party and the Greens have also started that conversation. Gareth has released a bill. We think we need to take more time and that we need to discuss it with the community, the legal, academic and tech community as to what should be in that and how it should be done. We're absolutely committed to doing that, though.
One of the reasons I joined the Internet Party was because of privacy and security. The only time I've actually ever participated in a street protest was against the GCSB bill. Mass surveillance doesn't work. Anyone who wants to argue with me elsewhere, I'm more than happy. I've got a whole TED talk on why we need to have more privacy and security. So absolutely mass surveillance is out of the question. I feel the governments, including the New Zealand government, the NSA, the US government, and the other five Eyes partners, have taken the internet and are subverting the internet, the very thing that is driving so much of benefits. They are using that against us for mass surveillance. Absolutely, I think we need to get a review. I'd like to see us exit the Five Eyes. I don't think there's any reform possible. In terms of privacy, it's absolutely central to everything that we do, we believe in. I just don't think a Bill of Rights is the only solution. It has to be an inherent part of everything we do, not an afterthought. And there is simply no discussion that there is a trade-off between or a balancing
We need both privacy and security. It doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Vikram. We can't trade them off. That they're critically important and they relate to each other. It's one of the big questions facing our country. What I want to see is a government that takes it seriously, is designing privacy principles in from the get-go, be it a kiosk for wins or an IRD system. It's got to be built in at the beginning. And sadly, we've seen some massive fails. When it comes to the mass surveillance issue, we don't have to trade them off against one each other. I was reading in the recently about the Marine Department, the US Marines head of security, who's recently been causing waves, say, in the US intelligence circles, because he's saying we don't actually have to be sucking up everyone's intelligence. We should be taking an open source approach to this problem. And in fact, most of this data is just out there if we used it openly. So again, it's not an issue of playing one off against the other. I'm with Vikram. I'm quite happy for New Zealand to exit the Five Eyes spying mass surveillance network. That's why consistently we've said we would close the Waihopai spy base. I want to feel proud about what New Zealand's doing on the world stage, not because we're part of a geopolitical bloc playing countries off against the other. I want to be doing the right thing globally, and I believe there's also business benefits from that. When it comes to the Internet Rights and Freedoms Bill, which I've drafted, what I think we need to do in New Zealand is make privacy a right. At the moment in legislation, it's only an interest. So you can see I've done a big section there how, by making it a right, we can enforce the right to privacy, and out of that comes things like the right to anonymity online, the right to, I believe, plain English translations of some of the terms and conditions is another example.
I think this is a really interesting question, actually, and I think probably if I see the nub of this question, how can we protect our way of life? Because security and privacy is about, for example, security if there are offshore, indiscriminate or digital breaches of security that may target your developments and what you're doing, then that could threaten your way of life. But at the same time, you want to protect your privacy and your freedom and things like that. Say from our party, we believe, here's an example, economic growth. But we also believe in environmental protection. I come from a region, Taranaki, where we have dairy farming and we have oil and gas exploration. But we also have a fantastic environment and a great mountain. Is it possible to have both? I think it is. In order for us to, I think, protect our way of life, security is a very important thing. If we dismantle, pull out a Five Eyes or whatever it might be, we've got to realise that we live in a world that not everybody is altruistic as we are. And if we become the security weakness in a global situation, then I think we have degrees of vulnerability that we probably don't want to have. If there's a hole in the net, that's where the fish will swim through. So I think it's important for us to have measures of security, whether that's digital, whether that's borders, whether whatever it might be, that is in keeping with the other nations that we operate with. In terms of... time's up. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. So I'll just say a quick request. If you guys have phones and would like to take pictures and tweet them, one of the people here is asking to make sure that we're promoting this event through social media, so please do tweet away and take photos. So who would like to ask a question now? Great.
Firstly, thank you for coming today. What an hard to decide which question to ask. Off the bat, except the last one, but having worked quite deeply in the startup community in Wellington, I'm a designer, and one that I haven't heard mentioned at all is the importance of design in the startup community. It's all about ICT. I would like to hear, then from Garrett, how we embrace design-led businesses. If we are going to develop global play businesses, like Lights of Zero, which are emulating Apple, which is design-led, how do we actually transform? And to you, Jonathan, what design actually means to innovation.
Thanks for the great question. I agree entirely. Design's a critical component, and you know, while we're talking about some of the things we didn't talk about as well, let's talk about the gender imbalance in the ICT sector and what we can do to address that issue. You know, when it comes to design, I mean, it's got to be built in right from the get-go. I've been doing a lot of work on digital manufacturing and 3D printing, laser cutting, all that sort of technologies. And what I'm finding from the amazing pockets of excellence happening around the country is what they're doing is meshing, you know, design schools, a bright idea with, you know, CAD schools or ICT schools, and producing, you know, innovative things. What I've learned is that the message we're sending lots of young Kiwis is the only way to, you know, wealth and fortune is to, you know, play for the All Blacks or win a reality singing show. What we're not giving our kids the right messages that we can actually, you know, be making our fortune. We can be growing jobs, doing things like designing websites, building games, printing products and selling them around the world. So I ran out of time before. What I'd like to see is more careers advice at high school, so people get good advice so they can make the right decisions. We have seen tertiary education become less affordable, less accessible, and in some cases downright impossible over the last 6 years. We need full free university is a wonderful idea, but we're not going to get there in the next 3 years. But there are concrete steps we can do right now to help these sectors out. So, great question. It's at the heart of it. We want to foster it.
Sure. I guess design covers whether it's mechanical, industrial design, or whether it's furniture, whether it's graphic arts, media, all sorts of different things. I think one of the things that we're seeing happening in our country is that we've got to grow beyond our commodity economy. You know, you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you know, one of the most basic needs is physical survival. So we produce food and all those sorts of things, which we know is going to always find a market. But I think as cultures certainly develop, aspects such as design become something which is very important for the quality of life and the enjoyment of life. A lot of design doesn't actually cost a lot more because it's an idea that you, whether it's a house, whether it's whatever it might be, that creates a huge, I guess, value around living. And so I think all of those things are really important to diversify and deepen our economy, especially when we see economies up in the Northern Hemisphere who come through the GFC, perhaps a little bit slower than us, start to spend their money a little bit more freely. Then what we're going to find is that design starts to become something that they spend their money on. You know, up in our neck of the woods, we had one of the best super yacht factories, you know, plants in the world. It suffered, finally closed down because Northern Hemisphere stopped spending money. But they were world leaders in design. And unfortunately, I think when economies go through, you know, different struggles, that's one of the areas that has a degree of vulnerability. So let's hope it you know, picks up in the next little while.
Thanks for the great question. And design is probably the cutting edge. And when you say ICT, I think the term has always really frustrated me. It's never encompassed really what this whole kind of sector represents. And it's because technology is everything that we do. It's not just in, you know, a software development or this thing called, you know, ICT, which is you know, in a box somewhere. For instance, Fonterra is a technology company. It's not just a milk powder. It's not a milk powder company. It's actually a technology company. So design, and whether it's Fisher and Paykel in Dunedin, or, you know, or another amazing design entity in Christchurch or wherever, that they're all really part of this technology, which we have to put our absolute intense effort into. I haven't looked in great detail at Gareth's 3D printing policy yet, but in principle, I think it's really strong and solid. I mean, this is one of these moments where you see us agreeing with each other, and it does surprisingly happen quite a lot. But it's got to go quite a lot beyond that, and it's got to go into the... You've got to look at how to join up the dots, how to make it happen. because you've got to actually have a really strong tertiary sector. And Dunedin, for instance, in 2009, the design school at the Polytech was canned by your government, and that was a huge opportunity lost to Dunedin. Those sorts of things are really important, that we've got to look at how to joining those dots up again from school through to tertiary education and then through into business.
So I didn't mention design because to me that's just so obvious. It's one of those things that that you would assume that everyone understands the importance of, but I think you're right, we don't. Better by design is a good example of how much difference design can make. But I'm quite confident that we as a country and we as a startup understand basically the importance of design. What does worry me is that we don't, as a country, have a design. We seem to be meandering along incrementally, fixing things and getting things better. I think one of the things that I really want to see is our country having a design and a plan to actually get somewhere.
Okay, more questions?
I'm just wondering if you could ask from the perspective of your party rather than just yourself, how does your party comprehend the changes that are occurring globally in digital, and how does your party use sense making around the opportunities for New Zealand in that changing dynamic?
Sorry, what's the second part of the question?
How does your party do its own sense-making to take advantage of the shared knowledge that I assume might be in the room, to take advantage of that shift, those shifts that are emergent? Mm-hmm. In other words, how do you know what's going on, and how do you maximise your collective ability to deliver from New Zealanders around the innovation and knowledge?
It's a really good. I'm just going to intervene here. It's a really good point. We've got a couple of things. We've got there are some things, smaller things that we're doing in terms of information sharing, which Gareth alluded to, the cross-parliamentary group that meets and actually has a really cooperative relationship. It's mainly in non-controversial areas, though. It's about trying to provide more access to Parliament through technology for the public to engage with Parliament and also to upgrade the Parliament's knowledge about ICT and technology issues and the importance of them. We could be doing a lot more in that space. The second thing is we've got a select committee process that allows the solid discussions to happen across parties and with parties around particular legislation. But we're not doing it proactively. I get up in the Parliament and give constant speeches on this issue about how we should be more across, for instance, data breaches and across the public sector, how we should be working together to have a shared approach on those sorts of things.
Just to give you a clearer sense of the question, it was inside your own party, please, because...
I thought you talked about how the parties work together. Sorry, that was my...
No, he was asking about your party and how your party understands the changes that are happening digitally internationally and how you apply that information to...
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. I thought you talked about how we are working together across parties.
I did. It was a great answer.
Okay, you've got another 20 seconds.
I don't have any time on that day.
We're the opposition. There's one spokesperson in my area. We do a lot of work with the sector to understand what's going on across the world. I go to conferences, I spend a whole lot of time at the whole conference if I can, listening, understanding, trying to work out what is happening in other parts of the world. Very happy to talk further about that offline if you want.
I'm happy to go next. It's a great question because there's true disruptive trends happening globally, and if New Zealand's nimble and takes the opportunity, we can actually build a richer New Zealand out of it. So in terms of how our party relates to it, I'm really happy to stand in front of you as the most democratic party. Our members develop our policy. As a caucus member, I'm not the one who writes our policy, it's our members. So for years and years, it's our members using web forms been designing our policy. In fact, it's a separate part of our party with its own constitution and framework. We're the first party in New Zealand to release legislation via crowdsourced. As another example, how we're trying to open up the process. We've got a young caucus, the youngest leadership in Parliament. We're proposing different ways of thinking and measuring things. So, for example, for a long time, we've had a GDP updated bill to broaden the range of economic and social measures we should be using as a nation, and we try and use that debate internally. So there's a huge range of these longer-term trends which we've championed, we've advocated for, we use internally, and it's kind of that green approach to politics, which is it's not about the short term, it's not about playing the game, it's about how do we position ourselves for the long-term betterment of everyone.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question, because I think you've identified that things are shifting very, very rapidly in the global situation. I think that the national government has been actually very nimble, if I use that word as well, because seeing the potential, the opportunities, and needing to make some serious adjustments to way government can take advantage of those. Setting up, for example, the UFP rollout is not just for you and I to watch movies easier. It's actually so that we can engage internationally, globally, far more effectively. Because we know that we are small and distant, and our markets are a long way away. So that sort of weightless economy needs to be able to engage and be involved up there. I mean, I've got a friend who works up in the Middle East who's working for a New Zealand company, who's an architect, and he works during our night. So the New Zealand company is able to do 24-hour service. That's the sort of thing that happens. Callaghan Innovation is a organisation now that oversees $140 million a year to help companies commercialise and to succeed here and then to grow and be able to engage overseas. NZTE has had a huge turnaround in terms of not only their capability but the funding they have in order to work with New Zealand companies and find markets. So what we see is huge opportunities. We know in the whole commodities area, in dairying, that Asia has opened up incredibly. China is now our biggest market for our exports. And that's not necessarily going to shift or change because the capacity of that nation is huge. So all of these things make New Zealand a place of huge opportunity if we can see it and grasp it.
For the Internet Party, I think the simple answer is that we're born digital. When we launched with a smartphone app and a website for people to sign up as members and got our 500 members within a few hours. When we did our candidate selection, we had a distributed selection and then brought them into Auckland where we did real-time streaming, allowed our members to evaluate everyone using an app developed by a Wellington startup called ShowGizmo. When we developed our policies, we use another Wellington startup called Lumio to do our policy incubator, so anyone can put up their ideas, they get discussed. And what I mean by born digital is we fundamentally understand that the main difference the Internet has made and digital has made is that there are no hierarchies. And so the reason we use Lumio is because it came out of Occupy, where there is no hierarchies for decision-making, where peer-to-peer decision-making happens and people decide amongst themselves how to develop a new policy, how to evolve the policy, how to get buy-in, how to vote. And that's the difference to me between fundamentally being born digital and understanding a lack of hierarchies and being comfortable in a peer-to-peer relationship versus an add-on physical world where you still believe in hierarchies.
Thank you. Right, more questions?
Hi there. Topic is ownership of data, and it's come from two ventures I've been involved with where essentially the first one failed because there was no clear definition, mainly because no parties had stood up to really, I guess, tackle that problem, and there have been parties I know that tried to have failed in the past. Second venture is a different approach, where it's about being custodian of data. I guess what I wanted to understand was, what's your stances on, I guess, outside companies, particularly around the world, claiming ownership of data of your local residents versus, I guess, us companies trying to maybe use that data and not own it and build upon it. And just really understanding, I guess, the legal side of would you be willing to help, you know, I guess, get a clear definition, because others saying no, and it's really, you know, what's your stance on that sort of stuff and behind the legal side?
Actually, true, can I take an editorial liberty?
I'd like to expand that, that's
a great question, that's very narrow though. I'd like to expand that out into general intellectual property and ask you, how do we balance the intellectual property rights of owners in Drew's cases? In Drew's case, it's between owners, which all have a piece of the action in terms of how that data was generated and collected. But things like, you know, copyright law, software patents, the whole area of intellectual property law, particularly with respect to digital stuff, is really, really murky. How is your party going to help sort that out?
Individual intellectual property right? Like, do you do something online and create data that causes an effect of that?
I don't know. I'll have a go. I can't do this in 1 minute and 30 seconds, sorry. But can I just say that really critically important issues, Digital Bill of Rights is going to have to grapple with those issues, and we're going to be looking at rights, clear rights that are reflected then in law around ownership and management of data. And that's really important, and about who's your rights as a citizen and your rights as an organisation over your own data. Really, really important stuff. In terms of the existing legislative environment, really good thing that happened last year was the passing of the patents bill that excluded software from being patentable. There's probably a bunch of you in the room who can help campaign around that issue. I Labor and drove that a lot of that work. It got passed by the government, but only after a lot of pressure. There was a very big coalition of the industry, and it was a really big fight. The TPP would have changed that law back to against software. We're looking as if that's on hold. Copyright, absolutely critical that we do a serious review of copyright in this country. We were supposed to do one last year, and the government put it on hold, and it was because of the TPP. We are absolutely committed to doing that. We're going to do it in consultation with you, and it's going to be go back to first principles.
Thank you, Greg. So just for clarification, is Labor for or against TPP? Sorry, I'm sure it's a question that's on the mind of many people.
Well, I'm sorry, I can't give you an answer for or against, because we've always said that we have to see actually what's in the thing before we can make that decision. I have argued passionately in my caucus and been taken seriously on the intellectual property provisions, and they are a bottom line in terms of what we would agree to or not, as to how far they would go.
Is your bottom line software patents?
It's one of the bottom lines.
Okay.
It's more than one.
Next speaker.
Okay.
If I can just, interpret the question, Drew, which is, you know, let's look at, say, public data. You know, I want a country to collectively set a goal with the most open government in the world, and all data that could be released publicly safely should be, instead of the other way around, which is we sort of pick and choose what should be released publicly. When it comes to, you know, intellectual property issues, you know, I'm happy to stand in front of you with a good track record. We're the only party to oppose the Copyright Infringing File Sharing Act, passed by people who knew hardly anything about the things they were legislating for. You know, we voted against the parallel importing of films, which is another temporary statutory monopoly for one content type, in this case, you know, old-fashioned films. You know, we're the only party that I understand has put out a proposal for copyright reform, which is my parody and satire of Fair Use Exemptions Copyright Amendment Bill. You know, when you look at the TPP, Pharmac, other intellectual property issues are affected. We know the copyright terms could be massively extended under the drafts. When it comes to the TPP, we can categorically say we're opposed to it, because we will not be supporting the secretive trade deal negotiated behind closed doors where all the power is given to only one side. What we know from the leaked text is it's not in New Zealand's interest to be signing it. So we've been categorical there, and when you look at our track record, what we've shown is that a clear argument that we need to modernise our copyright and intellectual property regime for the modern world.
So I just want to remind people that Drew did ask the question to try to address this issue.
Yeah, Drew.
In a minute and a half.
Yeah. I guess, just responding to something Gareth said, they're probably not that keen on farming, which is probably why TPB is not something high on the level for them. I really can't talk a lot about the intellectual property question that you've asked, except that it is a property right. It is something which is created by people and they own and they generate income out of, which is why some of the legislation that others have opposed, we have supported, and particularly around where. You know, I'm not aware of all the views of the people in the room here, but there are genuine Kiwi incomes that are earned in this country around some of these provisions in the law that has passed over these last few years, which we ought to respect and protect. And should you develop intellectual property, I'm sure, and generate income out of that, you would want that protected as well. So, you know, it's very important. We are a government who, as I said before, we are orientating our government to be business-facing. So we want to have regulation and high-quality regulation that actually protects innovation and hard work and ensures that the right people get the right reward for the effort that's put in place. I can't give you any specific policy positions, but I've done my minute and a half anyway.
Well, I don't actually think you addressed Drew's question, to be honest. It's about the question is around the generation of data, which is on the internet is a currency that is not just monetary. It's about reputation, all sorts of things, and how and that's not about intellectual property. It's actually about how does someone actually maintain control over that data.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I'll try to do it in two parts. The Internet Party will publish its copyright and open research policy tomorrow. There will be a first principles review for copyright, and there will be a need for immediate changes to the Copyright Act as it exists. There will also be a call for a mandate that all taxpayer-funded research be open access. In terms of data, very strong support for the open data movement. Again, it goes back to the logic of taxpayer funding in the first place. We would like to see all data open by default, and if not completely in public domain, then using a Creative Commons attribute would be best because that's the most liberal license that we've got out there. But that's all for non-personal data. I think we have a real problem when people misunderstandingly extend open data principles to private and personal information. I don't think there is a single answer for who owns data. I think that the answer is it depends. One of the discussions that we're having internally within our party is smart meters. And does the electricity company own the data or do you own the data? And I think sometimes ownership is the wrong word because ownership implies an ability to do things. And I think a better answer and a more nuanced answer comes from moving away from the word ownership and saying, can I as the householder get access and use that data to do what I want? And can the electricity company have limitations and constraints on what they can do? So I don't think ownership is the right single answer.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time. These guys do have to.
Except me, I've got plenty of time.
you guys have a minute each to just sum up? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Off you go. Thanks very much. Well, Dave and the panel and everybody who's participated, thank you very much for the opportunity to gather here. You know, I think it's important for people to understand from a from your perspective that the National Party isn't all about sort of legacy law and the way it used to be, and it's all about ownership of farms and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, times move. We've got a very broad caucus, a young caucus, rejuvenated caucus coming up in this election of people who are very savvy and smart and connected to all different parts of our economy. So if I can put an appeal to you is... Yes, what I said in terms of about our leader and some of our key people, that they are very connected to the marketplace, very connected to economic development, business and startups and understand that sort of thing. And I think the track record is that we have put huge amounts of effort, energy, money and people into the space, because we see this as a particular area where New Zealand can see some great advantage.
I will likewise thank you so very much for coming out today. Thank you for hosting us. Thank you to the other MPs and to Vikram. Thanks for the great questions. It's great that we're just talking about this stuff, because this is, you know, what we should be getting cross-party unanimity and agreement that we should be supporting the ICT sector. And this is an area where we shouldn't. We should be debating how we do it and how fast we do it, not about some of the first principles. So, you know, as a Green MP, I've worked well with all these MPs and parties on the table. We've, you know, insulated 300,000 homes with the National Party and a bunch of other stuff. Worked well with Vikram, a lot of policy congruity with the Internet Party. We've worked well with Labor. We'll continue to oppose the government and work with them when we can if they're the government, and we'll be at the heart of a new progressive government if that's what the electors want this election. So we're stable, we're competent, we're focused, we're prioritising our kids, cleaning up our environment, a smart, green, innovative economy, including the ICT sector as a priority. You know, that's how we're going to build a richer New Zealand.
For me, it's really simple. I think that our time has come. The internet generation, the time has come. We've had enough of being ignored. We've had enough of not being taken seriously. We've had enough of ideologies left and right. I think the time has come when we go on the basis of evidence, on the basis of data, on the basis of what our future could be. And we're certainly going out there and spreading the message of vote for Internet Mana, because I think the party vote, as we all know, under MMP is important. We are unapologetically disruptive. We're the startup kids on the block. We like startups. That's what we are. Don't. You'll hate us.
You know, I think you've heard some differences across the table. You've heard a lot of unanimity, but there are some core differences here. And the core difference is really between a party, the Labor Party, that wants to take a more hands-on approach to how our economic development goes forward and how what we're doing to create jobs for our kids. I guess that with the Greens and the internet, it's a matter of degree. You've got to remember that Labor is a party that's actually 98 years old this year, and we're based on principles. And those principles are opportunity. Opportunity for everyone, fairness for everyone, and justice. And behind that goes a whole lot of things, what we bring is a joined-up approach to policy. And we also bring some progressive new ideas and a determination to put what we think is the powerhouse of where our economy needs to go right at the centre, which is your industry. But we only can do that if we change the government. The only way to do that is actually to vote for us.
Okay, thanks everyone. So I just want to thank these guys again for coming along today. I know that all of them are open to engaging with us both individually and in groups like they're doing today. You can ring any of their offices and ask to talk to them, and you have a pretty good chance of scoring a slot with them. They do listen. They do want to hear your views, and so thank you for coming and listening to them today as well. Just a couple of quick announcements. One is that Startup Weekend Wellington is coming up at the end of August. This year the theme is education, and we would love you all to come along for that. But early bird tickets are still on, $79 for the weekend, basically covers your food. We've got educators coming from all over the country, as well as the usual designers, developers, and others. So it's going to be an amazing experience. We do still have some slots open for the startup clinic, so if anyone wants to come join that, just please say so on the meetup page. But we better let these guys get back to work now. But thanks again for
coming. Thank you.